We call this program The Quick and the Dead. And this is Bob, E equals MC Square, Hope speaking. There are four programs in this series. This is the third, and tonight we take up the hydrogen bomb. And in case you're wondering what a comedian like me is doing talking about the atom, may I say that as a taxpayer, I'm minding my own business.
There is a growing tendency in some quarters to act as if atomic energy were none of the American people's business. In my opinion, this is nonsense, and dangerous nonsense. If schemers or fools or rascals or hysterical stuffed shirts take the decisions about this thing out of your hands, it may then be too late to find out what it's all about.
That was David Lilienthal, former head of the Atomic Energy Commission and a smart cookie. And that's why old man Hope, who never took a science course in his life, has become NBC's atomic expert and nuclear counselor. The only thing we've got to sell is that atomic energy is darn tootin' our business. And if anybody is going to keep the world from blowing itself up, it's going to be nobody but you and me. His honor, the American voter and taxpayer.
The Quick and the Dead. The NBC News and Special Events Department presents the third of a series of four transcribed documents for ear on atomic energy. Tonight, Mr. Hope and the rest of us fellow taxpayers take up the possibilities of the new hydrogen bomb. Our tutor is William Lawrence of the New York Times.
So, that's how we've been learning. Sometimes it's a detective story. Sometimes it is just a business of nuts and bolts. As it was last week when Deke Parsons explained how he assembled the first combat bomb in flight on the way to Hiroshima.
I looked down at my hands. They were dirty, greasy hands, just as if I had fixed the carburetor and distributor in my car.
That's almost the slogan of this show, a nut and bolts version of atomic energy. And tonight we're back with Bill Lawrence of the Times, and we move on to the hydrogen bomb. All right, Professor, now that we're all experts on the atom bomb, how soon after we built the first atom bomb did we discover the possibilities of the hydrogen bomb?
Actually, Bob, the hydrogen bomb is as old as the atom bomb. That night at Alamogordo, when the first atom bomb was tested and successfully exploded, that same night, the hydrogen bomb exploded in the minds of man.
All right, Bill, never mind the poetry. What does that mean?
Exactly that, Bob. All the men who were at Alamogordo that night and witnessed the birth of the atomic age knew that a hydrogen bomb was virtually a reality.
I'm lost. How come?
I'm afraid I'm getting ahead of my story. To understand the hydrogen bomb, Mr. Hope, you need to understand only three things: the sun, a glass of water, and the atom bomb.
Well, I'm already an expert on the atom bomb. So let's get on with the sun and that glass of water.
Let me pour a glass of water for you. There it is. Plain water. Right out of the tap.
Yep. Good old H2O.
That's right. H2O. And why do we call it H2O?
Are you kidding? Everyone knows why we call it H2O. Well, because it, why, every child knows it's because, well, that's it. H2O.
Exactly. H2O simply means that all water is made up of two kinds of atoms, hydrogen atom and oxygen atom, with twice as much hydrogen as oxygen.
That's what I said.
Now, in this glass of water, there are many atoms of hydrogen. How many atoms in each drop of water, Bob?
Billions.
Right. And I might also say that just as uranium was the heaviest metal,
92,
hydrogen is the lightest atom, 1.
Gotcha.
Now, in those trillions and trillions of atoms of hydrogen in this glass of water, all the atoms are the same, except that one out of every 7,000 atoms is different. This was discovered by Harold Urey, one of the great chemists of our day.
In 1931, I was working at Columbia and experimenting with hydrogen gas. I discovered that all atoms of hydrogen in the water are not the same. One out of approximately every 7,000 was exactly twice as heavy as all the others. We called it heavy hydrogen.
Well, is that all there is to heavy water? I thought it was so difficult to get.
It is. The separation of heavy hydrogen from the light is one of the most expensive and difficult operations on this earth. Takes enormous quantities of electricity.
Check.
All right. Now, let's get back to the sun. In 1938, Dr. Hans Bethe of Cornell was able to assert and prove the following facts about the sun.
The sun is a cosmic phoenix, constantly renewing itself out of its own fires. Round in shape, as is the earth, and made up largely of hydrogen gas. The gas is in the form of a controlled hydrogen fire with a temperature at the center of 20 million degrees centigrade. This heavy hydrogen burning at this great heat is constantly welding its atoms together. And as the atoms join each other, they become helium.
And as the hydrogen in the sun turns into helium, the energy it gives off is the energy that makes it possible for life to exist on this earth. Everything we eat, drink, or use to live by has derived its being from the sun.
And the sun is a controlled hydrogen bomb of enormous size?
Precisely. But scientists tell us that even the sun won't last forever. It is constantly burning itself out and will die in about 50 billion years.
Would you say that again?
I said, the sun will burn itself out within the next 50 billion years.
Oh, you scared me. I thought you said 50 million.
Don't let it worry you, Bob. As early as 1922, a British Nobel Prize winner, Francis Aston, said,
should the research worker discover some means of releasing the enormous energy from hydrogen, the human race will have at its command powers beyond the dreams of scientific fiction.
What Aston did not know is that all hydrogen cannot be used. Only the...
I know, Bill. Heavy water.
Heavy hydrogen. Actually, the correct scientific term is deuterium. But we'll keep it simple. Deuterium is just chemist talk for heavy hydrogen.
And you mean as far back as the 20s, scientists knew about the hydrogen bomb?
It has been known for about 20 years that if you could succeed in lighting an atomic fire with heavy hydrogen, you would create a miniature sun. If you could only get it hot enough.
Now, wait a minute. Hold everything. You don't start an atom bomb by heat.
Good point. That's why we call an atom bomb a fission bomb.
Yeah, I know. You bang two hunks of uranium together, an atom splits apart, and the neutrons start jumping and we have fission.
Right. Well, it's different with the sun or the hydrogen bomb. This is not fission, but fusion. Fusion is the joining together of hydrogen atoms by intense heat. One is splitting atoms. The other is joining or fusing them.
Like welding.
That's a good word. Only in the sun, the welding torch is the sun itself, 20 million degrees. The incalculable energy released when hydrogen atoms fuse themselves into helium is what creates a hydrogen explosion.
So why didn't we build a hydrogen bomb first? All you have to do is put some heavy water in a cylinder and weld it together with enough heat.
That's right. All we needed was the welding torch, or as we call it, the match, to get a heavy hydrogen started. There was the problem that made it impossible. It would require as much heat as the center of the sun, which is
20 million degrees.
And where were you going to get it? The hottest fire ever produced by man on this earth was 2,500 degrees. To fuse, or weld, as you put it, hydrogen atoms, we need 10,000 times that much heat. And that was, of course, impossible.
Granted.
So the hydrogen bomb was overshadowed by the remarkable strides made by Meitner, Fermi, Szilard, and all the others in splitting the uranium atom. The first atom bombs were built, sent into combat, and ended World War II for us.
In the years that followed, our atomic energy program continued. At Bikini, we tested two more atom bombs, and we continued to build up our stockpile of more powerful atom bombs. At the United Nations, the United States, in the voice of elder statesman Bernard M. Baruch, presented its plan for the control of atomic energy among nations. Mr. Gromyko presented the Soviets' response to our plan. The two armed camps drew further and further apart politically, and nearer as the rockets fly. We in America rested secure in the knowledge that we had a temporary monopoly on the bomb. Then, late in 1949 and early in 1950, came three announcements that shook the world and changed our position. A president, a traitor, and a senator made news.
In the atomic age, a nation's sentries come in metal boxes with tubes and amplifiers for ears and illuminated dials for eyes. We call them Geiger counters. The Geiger counter responds to radioactivity as a burglar alarm to the unsure touch of midnight prowlers. Geiger counters are never silent. Usually, however, their beat is slow and unsteady, the only reaction monitored being that of an occasional cosmic ray coming from infinity, going nowhere. In midsummer of 1949, a Geiger counter, keeping guard in an uncontrolled atomic world, stood its lonely vigil. Suddenly, its pulse quickened, and like a super intelligent animal, it barked its warning to a democracy thousands of miles away.
This is George Hicks in the NBC newsroom in New York. President Truman has just announced that Soviet Russia has the atomic bomb. The announcement was made with dramatic suddenness a few minutes ago in Washington in a White House statement issued to reporters. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
A radioactive cloud, born somewhere in the wasteland of Russia, had been picked up by the winds of nature and gently blown out beyond the Iron Curtain. The Geiger counters had done the rest. We had given the Russians 5 years to build an atom bomb. They had done it in 3. How? An announcement on February 3rd shocked the world.
This is Merrill Muller in London. A British atomic scientist has been arrested and charged with giving away atomic bomb secrets, presumably to Soviet Russia. Less than an hour ago, Dr. Claus Fuchs, a British subject and top physicist, was arraigned in London's historic Bow Street Court on 2 charges of passing atomic information to an enemy.
Klaus Fuchs was no hack physicist. He was a member of the inner circle of the Los Alamos Brain Trust, where our top plans and dreams were born. He knew as much about our atomic energy program as almost any man alive. He also knew about the new hydrogen bomb. But the American people still were to be told. On November 1st, 1949, a senator appeared on a television program. His purpose was to show that there was not enough secrecy in the atomic energy program. In pleading for more secrecy, he made the most startling announcement since Hiroshima.
Here's the thing that is top secret. Our scientists, from the time that the bombs were detonated at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, have been trying to make what is known as a super bomb. So, from a talk by Colorado Senator Edwin C. Johnson, we learned last night of a new atomic weapon. Appearing on a New York television program, the Colorado senator spoke of the possibility of a new bomb, one with 1,000 times the effectiveness of the bomb that was dropped at Nagasaki.
So it was out in the open. The United States, aware of the fact that Russia had broken our monopoly, realized the vital necessity to maintain our atomic superiority.
This is Morgan Beatty in the NBC newsroom in Washington. President Truman has ordered construction of a hydrogen bomb. In a brief 12-line history-making statement issued this afternoon, the president gave the Atomic Energy Commission the go-ahead signal on the H-bomb.
Now, wait a minute. Hold everything again. Now I am confused. I thought you said a hydrogen bomb was impossible, that we needed 20 million degrees of heat to fuse the hydrogen atoms.
Exactly.
So what's changed? What are we going to do? Build a furnace 100,000 times hotter than ever built before and put it in a bomber?